Well, hello and welcome back to Searching Inward, a podcast brought to you by Restore Small Groups here in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm Seth, joined by my wonderful two co-hosts and counterparts here on staff, Scott and Anna.
Hi,
hey, guys, how are you?
Hello.
Oh, man, I wish I wish this was a video podcast because you guys look great and you're both so inviting, and I wish our listeners could view us all together.
It's a sight to behold, y'all.
It is, and I just love being with y'all and doing this. But today we are doing our third of four styles of episodes in our new season. So we've already done a topical episode and a participant interview, and today we're going to be talking about curriculum. So whether you know it or not, Scott's written about 43,000 books, and today we're going to be going through cracking open a brand new one in our curriculum. Each of Scott's books all start with the word journey. And so today we're taking a look into a book called Journey to New Beginnings After Loss. So Scott, to begin with, where did the inspiration for this book come from? Why in the series of journey books do you feel the need to write about grief and loss?
Well, it's like almost 30 years now ago that we started doing the 12-step groups at the YMCA. And I was in a 12-step group, and there was a couple ladies in there who actually were a grief therapist. And they were in the 12 steps for some issues that had happened in their lives. And so as we worked through the 12 steps, we completed it, we became very close friends. And to this day, they have been very influential in our ministry. And they had worked with 9/11. They had gone to Rwanda when they had the genocide over there to work in grief. I mean, and they had been certified through the National Grief Institute, which ended up where I got my certification. But when we finished the 12 steps, they pulled me aside one day and they said, you know, Scott, until you work through your unresolved loss and grief, you're not going to be able to complete your transformational path. Mm-hmm. And it really struck me. I said, well, I don't understand. And so they explained it to me. And so I went through their grief process, and it was a keystone in the beginning of laying a solid foundation for what my transformational journey was going to be. And it really opened my eyes to just how much unresolved loss and grief impacts us that is really not covered in, even if you do, if you work in 12 steps, if you work any kind of recovery process, we live in a society that just does not know how to grieve. And I had never even, when I heard the word grief, I immediately just thought of death. And it was not a death that was the unresolved grief and loss that I was struggling with. So it really opened my eyes to just how much loss there is that's unresolved in our lives, everybody's. And yeah. I know Anna's going to talk about it a little bit, but just our whole life is nothing but a journey of losing things. I mean, nothing stays the same. And so what I try to do in the book is also expand the concept of how people interpret grief and loss. It's so much more than death or divorce. So that's where it all began.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott. Could we go a little bit deeper into that? Because there definitely are a lot of cultural misconceptions. Like you said, it's often limited, loss or grief is limited to death of a person, right? One of my favorite definitions that I first heard from you when I went through my first group was any normal pattern that comes to an end. And how much more accessible is that for every single person on the planet? Everyone's experienced loss and has something to grieve. So, Scott, could you kind of just go into a little bit more definition on what grief and loss is and help us expand our framework for this?
Yeah, it's what the National Grief Institute taught was that any normal pattern that we have in our life and it comes to an end, we are going to grieve. And so, you know, starting in our childhoods, you know, friends move away, our families change, and we go to different schools, we get in different classes, our friends change. I mean, just things constantly that our normal patterns end. And it just creates what I like to tell people, what is the definition of grief? It's the beyond that it's just the end of any normal pattern. But what it prevents is I'm not able to be fully present in the now, in this. There's a part of me that's still stuck back there. And they teach that, how do I know something is unresolved? They teach that anything I still wish was better, different, or more is unresolved. And it really made sense to me. How many things in our life that were a regular pattern, and you wish it would have been longer, you wish it would not have ended, you wish it would have been better, and we get stuck there. And so that's that part of grief. And also, this is a key fact, you guys have heard me say so often, grief and loss is accumulative. It's like I always think of a jar. It just eventually it fills up. It may seem like an insignificant loss or something's changed, and all of a sudden I'm in just complete despair. It's because on the accumulation of the losses of my life. That's why when we do at the end from the Grief Institute, we do the grief graph. We look at the different losses that we've had in our lives, and they really, when people look at that on a sheet of paper, they're like, goodness gracious,
yeah,
that's a lot.
I think it's really important to acknowledge that, like, loss and change are very closely intertwined. And so no matter what your life looks like, life is always changing, right? There are facets of our life that is changing. And if we do not not only adapt, but really begin to process what those changes, how impactful they are to us in different ways, whether it's a small way or a large way, if we don't process those things, like, that grief is, like, it's accumulating, right? And just the smallest thing, if you don't process and deal with it, can be the thing that kind of sends you over the edge, that, like, overflows the jar. So, Scott, can you tell our listeners a little bit of what that would entail to complete communication around things that we wish were different, better, or more? How do we complete those communications? What does that look like?
Well, actually, the answer is right there. You in completing communication, we communicate what we wish was better, different, or more about a situation that has changed permanently and we have lost. And that's another reason we really advocate small groups, is that you cannot grieve alone. It's just impossible. You need others to process that with. I'm going to complete that communication in front of you. And then a lot of times in groups, when one person is talking about their loss and completing the communication around it, I connect to that, and it helps me then articulate and say, yeah, that's what I experience. That's what I feel. And otherwise, we stay stuck. And as I don't know if we're going to talk about this so much today, but those stages of grief, you know, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, sadness, and then acceptance, the danger of unresolved loss and grief is you can get stuck in any of those stages for decades and decades. We never move beyond it. And so having the tools and having a process where you can complete all that communication in a very vulnerable place, it's safe, is what it takes.
And I'd love it if we could just parse out the difference here a little bit as well between loss and grief. What's the difference here? Feel free for either of you.
I think loss is the actual, like, incident of change, and grief would be the feelings that manifest because of that.
I mean, that's as well said as you can say it. Loss is the actual, was it, whether it was a relationship or it was something in my life, or it was something that was normal in my life and I lost it, it's gone now. Mm-hmm. But the grief is what the emotional connect I had to that, and what I'm.
Yeah, yeah. Scott, in the book, you talk about how loss starts at the very beginning. Loss starts, you know, as little kids, and I just think about how, man, how early on, at the very beginning of everyone's lives, we learn that this is uncomfortable, and how do I defend against this? And so unless we're taught, like, how to deal with loss, most of us aren't going to move into processing it, which is the grief, which is allowing ourselves to feel the loss, right? Mm-hmm. I think of, you know, it's said in different ways and different traditions, but the way that I like from Richard Rohr the most is he talks about this three-stage kind of order, disorder, reorder. And most of us, I think we like to stick with the order stage, you know, and moving into disorder is where we start to feel the loss. But you can't become new, growth-oriented, healthier people until you move into the reorder stage. But that means you've got to move into the disorder stage, which is when you let go of, you know, the order that isn't working for you anymore. That's a loss of some kind. Yeah.
I feel like I can resonate with that so much, just even in my personal life. So, you know, I was married for a really long time, and there was a lot of just predictability and structure and order, but it was dysfunctional. It wasn't working. It wasn't serving. And so, like, that marriage ended, and now I find myself in a place of, like, dating, which is, my word, complete disorder, right? I, like, there's no structure. There's no predictability. There's no solid, like, outcome. It is, to say it is messy is an understatement, right? But I know it's part of the process that I have to get to get to the reorder place, which is finding a place of what does a healthy, committed relationship look like? You got to go from this order of the dysfunction and predictability through this disorder process, which I squarely find myself in right now. It's terrifying, but keep pressing through and communicating, like, about the losses and the changes and the uncomfortability mm-hmm. to hopefully get to that reorder place.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's even a good question to just, if you're listening, to ask yourself, which one of these stages am I in? The grief stages, for sure. But also, am I in a place of order right now? Am I in disorder? Because I think a lot of times our denial of the fact that we're in a stage of disorder doesn't allow us to move into the life we're actually looking for, you know, which is in reorder. Where, so are you in order? Are you in disorder? Are you in a place of reorder?
Right. And I just think not being afraid of the disorder, that's the hard part,
totally.
Right? Because
it's part of the process.
I think our cultural conditioning would lend us to lean into the fact that we have to have it together, right? It's being disorderly, disorganized, uncertain, doesn't really resonate well with our cultural ideals. And so being able to embrace that is really challenging.
I think so many people who come into our groups over the years, they don't even know, they can't even put a name to it, what they're struggling with, and it's unresolved loss and grief. And it's going to come out sideways if it's not processed in a healthy way. It just is. We're going to drink more. We're going to sleep more. We're going to eat more. We're going to disconnect more. We're going to watch more TV. We're going to, you know, scroll on the internet. We just feel out of place. It's just, there's so many symptoms of it. But that's why I think people who are trying to focus on one's behavior they're struggling with, I think they need to look deeper into, is there some kind of unresolved loss and grief that's contributing to their the emotional disorder that they're struggling with? And it's such, what you guys were saying at the beginning, it is such our society just does not want to look at grief and loss. It's, how can I distract you from it? How can we make it? You know, I'd hear things like, my friends, hey, we're going to go see so-and-so. Whatever you do, don't bring up the loss of their dog. You know, when actually that's what we need to talk about. Tell me about.
We need to be comfortable with the uncomfortable and normalize that life isn't always comfortable and be okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah, you say in the book, Scott, that these unresolved emotions sabotage our ability to live fully in the present. Mm-hmm. But if we learn to grieve effectively, or like really embrace and realize the fact that we're in a state of disorder appropriately, if we can effectively grieve that space, then we can arrive at a new beginning and continue the journey with free hearts, move into that or reorder space. Yeah.
Dr. Greenspan, in her book, Healing Through the Dark Emotions, The Wisdom of Grief, Fear, and Despair, she says that grief is actually the most spiritual process that a person can go through that leads to transformation. She likes to think of the word alchemy, you know, that what once was this can actually be transformed into something beautiful, that there's nothing as beautiful and as whole as a broken heart, because it's now it's open to really recognizing the vulnerability it is to be a human being and to live on this planet. And if you can't live in that risk, it's going to be really detrimental to your life. And so mm-hmm. I see every grief group we do as a very sacred opportunity for us and our participants to, because it starts at the very beginning in our early childhoods, our stories of what losses have you struggled with, and what has contributed to where you are today, and understanding that just how much broader loss and grief is than just a death. It's
Scott, can you speak to, like, maybe what are, just to help our listeners kind of wrap their heads around, what are some of the different ways that loss manifests besides just death? Like, what are some of the different losses that we grapple with?
Well, I think for one, the biggest one is dreams. What I dreamed of, what my life was going to be like Anna, like you were sharing, you know, what you dreamed your marriage was going to be like and have a family. And I tell people, even if I have a good marriage, often it's not what I dreamed it would be. That doesn't mean it's not good. It's still, it wasn't this magnificent dream that I once had, or my job or my career, all these things. So dreams, loss of innocence. Many of us, many of our participants had tough childhoods where there was issues in their family of origin, and they were put in unsafe space, and or they were asked to be an adult when they were still a child, and things like that. So loss of innocence, or there was abuse, any form. And then there's this place, you know, and I that's a big one for me. I'll give an example. Nashville. I came here in 78. It was kind of a lot different than it is now. And so, yeah, it's great that it's growing and it has all this, but the simplicity of it that I once loved is gone forever. It will never be again. So sometimes I don't recognize that place, or just stages of life. I'm at a stage in my life now where diminishment has begun, and it's a place I've never been. And I can't go back to when I was 30, 40 years of age. I feel that. So place, loss of love, loss of success. There's just so many different ways that we need to examine the places that are unresolved, that are losses. Mm-hmm. And I just think, I always bring our people back. Anything that was once a normal pattern, that whether it was great or just good or just okay, and it ends, you will miss that.
Right. Or if it's something that should have been a normal pattern, right? Something that should be healthy, right, and a given, but maybe was not part of your experience, you've lost out on that, right? If you didn't have a healthy, functional family of origin, that's a loss, right?
And I want to say, and I think it's a perfect time to insert this, but in all these years I've seen, there's two types of loss that I see people struggle with to resolve. Some can resolve them easier, some. But if I had something that was beautiful and loving and I have these fond connection to it and it ends, I'll grieve that. I'll miss that. But I'm able to move on and actually still have a sense of gratitude and rejoice for what I once had. It was beautiful and it contributed to so much to my life. But then there's these things that we regret and resent that either were done to me or I did to myself, or things I wish I would have done differently. And those are the losses that I find people have a really difficult time resolving and moving past, because it has to deal with forgiving themselves or forgiving other people.
I wonder if we can come back to just briefly and drill down a little bit more deep into the different kinds of loss as well. So I'm just looking at these, in the book, again, you address loss of dreams, loss of innocence, a loved one, loss of place, loss of love and success. And I think of loss of dreams. For me, two come to the surface. First off, you know, my wife and I, the first pregnancy we had, we lost. Mm-hmm. And that was a loss of the dream of being a father, of being a parent, and parenting with my wife. And that was some of the first strange, awkward, weird loss, because, you know, it was early enough for us in the process that, I didn't have the biological experience of being pregnant. So it was more of an idea, really. And it was just strange to experience how deeply that affected us, but also just how psychologically my brain was defending me against feeling that back then in the moment. Like, it was still really hard for me to even put the name of miscarriage to what had happened, because the experience of being so overwhelming, it was really difficult to make it a reality by naming it what it was. But yeah, and the other one I think of is kind of my singer-songwriter career. You know, I did music for 20 years, and it was really that my identity was wrapped up in that, you know, and I really miss expressing myself in that way. I don't have an avenue that I get to do that, and so there was a loss for me that I'm in some ways I'm still working through and grieving, that I don't get to show up in the world in that way anymore and express myself and share art like that. That was such an important way for me to be in the world.
Yeah, you know, and Seth, I think that's reminded me of how often in our grief groups somebody has gone through a divorce, and it was not a healthy relationship, and it's over. And so in some ways, there's a sense of relief and they have a new opportunity to start over and go from where they are and do it, so find something hopefully that's better for them. But at the same time, they've lost the dream of what they once entered into that relationship that they had. Mm-hmm. And I think it surprises them how much they are grieving that. And they so loss of dreams to me is just huge. Because often there's quite a long period of time that was accumulated in that relationship or whatever, or job or whatever it was, and it didn't work out. And so those are difficult. But that's, again, why we need to look and expand our definition of grief.
Yeah, let's move on to loss of innocence. Scott, you say in the book, loss of innocence can be one of the more difficult losses to grieve because we frequently cover up this sort of loss, right? Mm-hmm. You say we might self-medicate to soothe the trauma, ultimately leading us to addictions. Can you continue and say that when we delve into the problem more often than not, we realize that childhood trauma is the source of a lot of addiction. Can you just talk a little bit more about that loss of innocence?
Well, it's what I was saying earlier, like it usually some form of abuse. And when people hear abuse, again, they just think of physical. But there's the majority of the abuse that I've heard over the years in our groups was emotional, where parents were just not present to their child when they were a child, or they dominated them and made them, you know, follow a path that they were trying to just control their growth, or the family split up and they were then asked to be like a mother, or they were asked to be like a father. You know, you hear things like, well, now you're going to be the man of the house, you know, and you're just a child. And those are forms of innocence that I've lost. And I think also with abuse, there's usually shame attached to it. And it's the shame that I think so often leads to the addictive response. You know, they want to medicate that. And so it's difficult to look at those places of our lives. I like what the Minerth Meyer Clinic teaches. No one is to blame, but all are responsible. So people are responsible for how they treated us in our childhoods. But then we have the responsibility of how we're responding to it. But, and I think one of the responsibilities is to own it. This was a huge loss for me. Sometimes people will be sharing their story, their childhoods, and I'm just like, that's huge losses. And they don't even know it.
Yeah, because you don't know what's not normal, right? Your experience is normalized. Yeah. And so you just don't even recognize it maybe as something that should have been different, or that other people had different experiences from you. And yeah, that's really, it's really challenging to, be saddled with things as a child that puts you in a position to function in a way that is beyond your developmental stage. It is a huge loss because you don't get to enjoy all of the progression of just a normal development, either physically or emotionally. And when you miss out on things, that's a loss.
Yeah. Anna, would you like to take us into the next two? Loss of a loved one and loss of place?
That sounds fun. I can speak to those things because I have experience with those. So coming up actually in about 2 weeks is the 10-year anniversary of losing my brother. I had one sibling, an older brother, who, due to the loss of innocence in our family of origin and the amount of dysfunction there, just couldn't, I think, didn't have the tools, didn't have the support system to deal with all of the trauma. So 10 years ago, he made the decision to take his life, which was absolutely devastating. And so processing that loss has been an ongoing challenge. And it's difficult, especially, I think the next loss ties into this, which would be a loss of place. In my life, I have not had deep roots. I have moved a lot of times. I think I counted, by the time I was 18, I had lived 14 different places and have moved a lot since then as well. But when this particular loss of a loved one happened in my life, I was living in a place where nobody around me had any frame of reference to who my brother was, right? They didn't know him. They barely knew me. And so without having that place, that sense of stability, of roots, of a support network, when you lose something significant, like your only sibling, it's really difficult to process that, right? It's really difficult to complete communication. Because you don't have those sounding boards or you don't have somebody that really understands because they don't know. It's so that's been both of those have been huge challenges for me in my life. And I'm learning to grow beyond those and recognizing that, yes, grief is accumulative. But as we grow, we expand our capacity to hold the grief. So that's a little bit of my story with grappling with some big losses.
Yeah. Anna, I just want to say thank you for sharing that. Moving into the last two here briefly, I think the loss of love, you know, 6 or 7 years into my marriage, my wife and I found ourselves in a pretty bad spot, you know. And, you know, we ended up finding some really, really amazing help, but it was it's really tricky when you move from I've heard from a couple of different marriage specialists out there that there's kind of three stages to relationships. You move into like the chemical, like the high, the excited experience of when you first get to know this person, when you're first meeting them and how amazing it is, and then you start to realize there's conditions and there's aspects of this person that are actually kind of weird and they remind you of what you didn't like growing up. And you have to move into, you know, recognizing that I don't have the level of feeling that was once here when the chemicals were high and we were, you know, kind of high off of one another and it was exciting. And then you move into, if you can even get past that stage, move into the stage of commitment. You know, you're committing to one another, even though there's lacking something there in feeling, but you're committing to the difference in one another, you know, instead of seeing it as an opposition. And that difference is now what makes a beautiful relationship. But yeah, I just think of, there's a quote from Esther Perel talks about how she'd been married to three people. And she says that she's lucky enough that they were all to the same person. And I think of that for my marriage. You know, my wife would say that she's been married to at least three versions of me, but yeah, there, we had to go through a loss of some kind of love, or at least the version of each other that we had fallen in love with initially, and that was really, really difficult. We had to process that so that we found ourselves in that disoriented space, you know, so that we could move into reorder. How are we going to be in relationship with who we are today? And then the last one, loss of success. Scott, you talk about this place is like a fear of failure and unrealized dreams. Yeah, I wonder if you could just briefly touch on this a little bit as well. Loss of success.
Well, it's, you know, it is tied to dreams. We have a vision of what we think we can aspire to be, to do, whether it's a vocation, whether it's some kind of an accomplishment. And for me, it's even, I'm divorced, so marriage. If it doesn't succeed, you feel like you failed. And so many things we label as success or failure, when you missed the mark, you did not achieve, it did not work out the way that you hoped and dreamed that it would, and you're going to grieve. And I had two huge things in my life. I wanted to be a professional football player, and I mean, it was all I ever wanted to be for 21 years. And then the moment I got cut, they said it was over. I was like a little boy entering an adult world. I mean, I had no other dreams. I had failed to achieve what I always wanted to be. And then I always had this dream and vision of what this beautiful marriage would be like. And I did not succeed at that. So that's a part of the grieving helped me actually see that, to reframe them as not failures, but as passages into, because I did try. I tried the best I could in all of those. And I actually came out of them better than I was before. So growth is such a powerful antidote. But if you don't resolve the grief, you get stuck there and label yourself, well, I failed. I was not successful. So there's so many ways that we can help people expand their understanding, like we've talked about earlier, of just how unresolved loss and grief is affecting us. Because you talk about an ultimate paradigm shift is when you finally get to acceptance in grief, and you can see it as a passage instead of something that I'll never be able to get past. Mm-hmm. That paradigm shift can lead us to a whole new lens of looking at life and ourselves. And that's the definition of the last stage of grief is acceptance. My heart was broken, but now it is broken open for God to bring new things. And I can use this actually to move me forward. It's almost like Prochaska talks about, it's recycling. I'm not starting at the very beginning. I'm starting from where I am this place. And I'm going to use what I have gathered from that. But I'm telling you, there's not a person listening to this podcast that has not had some area of loss in their life that they need to be aware of. How can they need to resolve that?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just reminded, Scott, through your words, that real growth includes loss. So if you want to grow, you got to realize that there will be loss involved. That's part of the process. And I wonder if we could just kind of closing up here, maybe have just a few brief final words from each of us. You know, I'm going to just address, you know, this topic is obviously heavy. And I just encourage y'all to, like, when you start to go into that, into working through some of your loss, to grieve, to really give yourself space and time, because to feel these things, it's there's no efficiency to this. There's no such thing as doing this efficiently. To grieve is to sit in it as long as needed, and that's hard. That's very hard, and I know this is heavy. So I just want to, Scott just named this, but you know, loss impacts all of us deeply, but we do get to have a say about how we handle it, or if it handles us. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I'll say is that, you know, burdens always become lighter when we allow other people to help us carry them. So doing your grief with a trusted other or within a Restore small group.
For me, that's why I put the title A New Beginning. Grief isn't the end. It actually can become the beginning of something new and even better. Not so much better, but something more than I've ever experienced. I can move forward into something, you know, almost a completely new realm of being. But we cannot make a new beginning if I'm still holding on and stuck in the past. And that's where the unresolved loss and grief is holding me back. And so I can declare all day long I want something new, but if I'm still holding on to the past, it's just not going to be possible. So, and again, I just have to emphasize, our society does not endorse grief. It does not. It wants to, just look at how it deals with aging. It's somehow you can do plastic surgery and whatever you can do to avoid the reality that you're getting old and you're changing. And there's just no grace in our society for that. And so it can be then a new beginning. It can be a new beginning. It can be a pathway, as Dr. Greenspan talks about, of transformation and the most spiritual growth you'll ever have.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just a difficult path.
It is. And if you need help with that path, I would highly encourage you to maybe sign up for a small group that deals specifically with grief. We have our Journey of New Beginnings, Journey to New Beginnings offered on an ongoing basis. And I think our next round will kick off the first week of June, and registration is up and live on our website. So if this is something that you find would be helpful, if this has articulated to you like, yes, I am struggling with loss, and maybe it has nothing to do with a death, this group could be very helpful for you. So I just want to encourage you all, there is hope ahead. There is the possibility for new beginnings each and every day. And so whatever we can do to come alongside and support you in that, we would love to hear from you. You can learn more at our website, which is restoresmallgroups.org. Thanks for tuning in, friends.
Hey, it's Seth. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Searching Inward podcast. If you've enjoyed listening or have benefited in any way from the podcast, we would love for you to come alongside and join us in the mission to bring hope and healing to the world. By considering becoming a monthly giver of even $5, you're making a huge impact in the ways that we are able to serve. So please consider giving by going to restoresmallgroups.org/donate. Thanks.